The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Looking back at the 2023 NFL Draft, there weren't too many players who were negatively impacted by a rookie being brought in. Now, that could be a different story this year, as we are expecting 3 stud wide receivers to hopefully go in the top 10. I think you could obviously look at Tyler Algier, who was negatively affected last year by a running back being brought in. Maybe David Montgomery was as well, as they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs. But will things be different this year? We do have some pretty high profile, you know, offenses, some quarterbacks like Josh Allen that need a wide receiver. And I'm going to stop talking now and bring in Dave and Jamie. I'm Adam with Dave Richard and Jamie Eisberg. So we're going to talk about players who could be affected the most by rookies, basically. And I think the tight end position is interesting. What about Dalton Kincaid, Trey McBride, Evan Ingram? What if they draft, those teams draft a wide receiver in round one? What does that mean? Dave, I'm going to kick it to you. Give me one player who could be most impacted. It doesn't have to be most, but who could be impacted negatively or positively by a rookie being brought in on the NFL draft weekend.
I gave you a list of a lot of players who I thought could be negatively impacted, and it's tough to pick one. I'm going to give you a couple of long shots at running back that could be negatively impacted. And we've talked about them. Travis Etienne, Rashad White. Etienne's in a contract year. The Jaguars have nothing great behind him on the depth chart. Bucks have nothing great behind Rashad White on the depth chart. I would be a little scared that both of those teams could add a running back that could take work away from the studs that we love.
You know, is it a bigger concern for White than for Etienne as we sit here today?
I guess. But I mean, I would understand why both of those teams would add a running back. Now, I would love it if we get through draft weekend and neither of them. It's really more of like, what's the draft capital spent? Because I would imagine that both of those teams would get at least one more running back in this draft class. If they do it on day 3, I'll be happy. If it's day 2, less happy. In fact, the opposite of happy. What would that be? Unhappy. There we go.
Yeah, that is the opposite. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to remember. Was Tank Bigsby a day 3 pick last year?
I think he was
a day 2 pick.
I think it was round 3.
Yeah, he was round 3.
Jacksonville would be a little surprising if they added somebody to me.
You could see it on day 3.
88th overall.
88th overall for Bigsby, yeah.
I thought it was day 3. What do I know?
Yeah, look, there's not a huge difference between round 3 and round 4, but there is a difference. But White has just not been a good running back. He doesn't.
But you keep saying that.
Except
it's true. It's true though.
Except for this one thing called stats, which he gets a lot of
carries
because he gets a ton of opportunity.
Todd Bowles at the owners' meeting was raving about him, you know, and called him an elite playmaker. I think he said there aren't that many guys. But you know, you brought this up quite a bit about the run defenses that he faced, and
that is true.
I didn't read the story. I just saw the headline, Pro Football Talk. About Rashad White getting the Rams system this year and how he feels or they feel. I don't know who quote. I just saw it was like that White's going to benefit or something like that. I'll try and find it after we move on from this. To me, that's a depth addition, not a replacement addition. And I know you guys feel the same way, but I just don't see either player, and I know the Jaguars have said they want to take work off of ETN, but not significant work. And I don't think the Bucs want to take significant work off of Rashad White. Like, these are more handcuff type players that we'll be looking at, as opposed to tandem like players. Like, this is not going to be a Tajay Sharp type, Tajay Spears type situation of, you know, someone who's going to get a lot of work, or Jaylen Warren going to get a lot of work. These are going to be strictly backups that are looking at maybe five touches a game.
I got PTSD from you saying Tajay Sharp. from your lips to the fantasy gods' ears on those guys. But if it is a day two or a day three pick, then it could be something that could turn into a tandem. Which,
but again,
suck.
We have Exhibit A. The Jaguars did this last year, and it didn't pan out. Not just because they spend the draft capital on these players. We still have to see how it all works.
Right.
Sure.
They may not
it
be.
It doesn't mean that they won't try again.
And it's not a great running back class either. So
right. I don't see it for Jacksonville. Tampa Bay, I do from a depth perspective. I mean, Jacksonville bringing back Dearness Johnson, I think, was kind of their indication of this is what they're going to do. They're just going to use those guys a little bit more.
And I also think that if Jacksonville drafts a running back, it could be an indictment on Tank Bigsby. I think they could certainly sprinkle someone in. We just want to make sure ETN doesn't lose the goal line work. I thought, like, Bigsby going into the NFL draft, Bigsby in college was so good near the goal line, and ETN never really had been, but Bigsby just didn't really do anything.
Improved their offensive line too, so that could help.
Yeah. And here's the thing with Rashad White. I'm just going to say, you know, look, not a scout, right? If you think maybe he's better than his numbers, one thing he's really good at is avoiding negative plays. I'd say his profile, that's the best thing that Rashad White does. He's really good at that. He doesn't have a lot of carries for zero or negative yards. Maybe he's just been behind a bad offensive line in a bad scheme. He is really good in the passing game, so I got to give him credit for that. Catches almost every target he gets, and he does make big plays in the passing game. But as a rusher, you know, last year, basic metrics, advanced metrics, one of the worst. So is that all on him? That's the thing about running backs. It's usually not all one. It's not on the running back, but Rashad White just. I mean, I don't want to go through everything, but, you know, explosive plays, yards before contact, after contact, rush EPA, success rate, all really, really bad for Rashad White. And then just simply, you average 3.6 yards per carry. I don't know a good running back who does that. So
no.
So just yeah, to go back to the, I found the story. It was in regards to something he told the team's website, and it was about Liam Cohen's offense coming from the Rams. And this is what he said. If you're a guy in this league, you want to be a guy that is scouted for and respected. I've seen that in people just leaving me out. I saw that and wanted to make the most and make people fear me, make people respect me and say when I come in the game, it's not just 13, 14, meaning Evans and Godwin. Number one, you have to worry about two. Now, your point about his running is clearly valid. His playmaking, which I think is what Todd Bowles is talking about, he's one of the better pass-catching backs in the league.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that is huge for us, which is why I think, you know, you're looking at him if he does not get significant competition, which again, depending on the level of draft capital they spend on a running back, like, he's going to be one of my favorite round two picks.
I love that we're spending all this time on two guys that might not get much serious competition, but there are other running backs. I've got eight.
You brought those.
There might be eight other running backs.
I belabored it.
There are eight other running backs that aren't as sexy as those two names who could get some competition, probably more seriously will get more competition than what's going on in Jacksonville and Tampa.
But it's more fun to talk about.
That's why I brought it up.
I like it. I'm just saying that if the Bucs surprisingly draft a running back in the second or third round, let's say.
Right. Like, they could get Brooks, and Brooks is an exact fit for that offense.
I'm not going to rule out that guy being the best rusher on the team. Whereas I couldn't see a scenario where somebody's going to outrush Travis Etienne on Jacksonville if they bring in a rookie.
Like, would you be scared if Estime went to Jacksonville?
Oh, he's like my... look, I don't like big, slow guys. So, no, Estime would... That's not the example.
He would not make you scared to take Travis Etienne, and I agree.
No, but if it
were... He would theoretically take work away, but we said the exact same thing about Bigsby last year. We just have to wait and see.
I don't think I got a chance to say this when we talked about running backs on Monday, but Chris Trapasso mentioned he ran a 4.71 40 or something like that. He did run a better 40 at his pro day. It was in the 4.5s.
So does everybody.
Yeah, but he ran a 4.7.
I shaved off 0.2 of a second on my pro day.
Jamie, was there someone you wanted to spotlight as a player that's got a lot at stake?
Negatively?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, no, positively. I mean, my favorite one's obviously Kyler Murray. You know, you look at what he could get, whether it's they stay at four or they trade down. I saw one mock trade of, I think it was the Giants moving up to four and the Cardinals going to six and still getting Neighbors or Odunze. I forget which mock draft it was. They're in such prime position to help Kyler Murray. And, you know, it's going to suck because the drafts that we've done now, where his ADP is, which is where it'll probably rise to, you know, he'll be, I think, just outside the top five quarterbacks if he does get Marvin Harrison, for example. He could easily get back into being one of the elite fantasy quarterbacks based on how he runs and what the weapons they could put around him. I hope they put two guys around him, to be honest with you, for his perspective.
And then I've got a little dark horse for you here of a player who could be positively impacted by the NFL draft. I will tell you about that in a moment. We have a lot of great podcasts for you to check out. This is the time, right? We got an NBA podcast. We got NFL draft podcasts. We've got golf. We've got soccer. We've got fantasy baseball. Go to cbssports.com/podcasts and check out our entire selection. You can see it here if you're watching on YouTube. By the way, you can watch all of our shows, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, live and on demand. And if you go to our YouTube page, by the way, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, and you can't find one of our full-length shows, just hit the live tab. But you'll see here the Early Edge, a betting podcast. I forgot about that one. We have great podcasts. Please check them out. We're going to take a break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to give you one more player that could be positively impacted by a rookie being added or rookies being added. Then we'll get into news and notes. We have a lot of them. And we'll be right back after this on Fantasy Football Today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Well, this whole show was just a ruse for me to be able to talk about Daniel Jones, because obviously that's what this is all about. And could he be... if he is the quarterback for the Giants in 2024, could Daniel Jones be a borderline top 12 guy? You're going, no, no way. I'm saying yes. Yes, he's coming off a torn ACL. Yes, he's bad quarterback. He's just not a good quarterback. I don't think he is. But specifically, if Malik Nabers, if the Giants draft Nabers, they've never had a really good wide receiver in Daniel Jones's time. And here's the point I would make. 2022.
Why are you crapping on Sterling Sharp? Sterling Shepard.
I wouldn't crap on Sterling Sharp. Shepard's fine, but Nabers is a different beast. The Giants have never been a good yak team. The highest in the 5 years that Jones has been in the league, the highest they've finished yak per catch was 20th. They've only had 1 year where they've been higher than 26th. I'm sure Daniel Jones has something to do with that, but the receivers do as well. Nabers is a guy, Jones likes to throw short. He's a guy that can take the ball and go. But Jones 2 years ago was number 13 per game, but like basically tied for 12th per game with Jared Goff, 2 years ago. And last year, if you just look at his four, he only played four healthy games. He had pretty, very similar yardage passing and rushing to what he did in 2022. Just had career low touchdown rate, career high interception rate. It was horrible. Even for him, he was horrible. But give him a good receiver, and can he rush for, let's say, 600 yards? That's a question mark coming off torn ACL. But he's been over 700, you know, on pace for over the last 2 years. So, in his healthy games. So, that's okay. I actually think you've got a sleeper there in Daniel Jones. If the Giants can finally give him a good wide receiver, There you go. That's my quote.
And if the Giants don't draft a quarterback.
And they will draft a quarterback at some point. It's just, will it be a day one quarterback who's going to walk in as a starter? Or will it be more of a... He does... Look, someone says, he sucks, move on. He does suck. He's not good. But he runs. He runs. And I would say, like, Deshaun Watson, for example, played poorly last year as a passer. He was not a good quarterback last year. He still was not bad from a fantasy standpoint because he had this high rushing floor. Jones runs even more than Deshaun Watson. So I just want everybody to point that, just put that out there. Malik Nabers could make Jones relevant. I don't know if Adunze can, because Jones can't really throw downfield. But Nabers
can. Are you encouraged with the moves the Giants have made to bulk up their offensive line? Because I think that that's a hidden factor for Jones. Because I think, I say this all the time, when there are a ton of quarterbacks in this league, when they're pressured, they wilt. He wilts really, really quickly when the offensive line doesn't do a good job. And he's had a terrible offensive line. But they've added 1, 2, 3, 4 veterans, 5 veterans to at least provide depth. Mm-hmm. If that offensive line's okay, maybe Jones has a chance. And you add a receiver with him. To be a top 12 quarterback, though, that would surprise me.
It'd be low end. But to your point,
a decent bye week replacement quarterback.
To your point, use
him for like 3 weeks.
He only had Andrew Thomas for one game last year. And that's one of the best left tackles in football. All right. Jones is the guy. Jones is the kind of guy, if he's going to be a top 12 quarterback, and you scoff out there, he did it 2 years ago. Okay, he was basically tied for 12th per game.
There were people drafting him as a number one quarterback last year.
Exactly. He needs everything to be perfect. He cannot survive a less than ideal situation. But if he has a decent line and Malik Nabers, and the reason why I say Nabers and not Odunze Davis is I don't trust Jones to make Odunze good. Whereas I know Jones can throw a 5-yard completion, and Nabers is the kind of guy that can make that into something. All right, some news items here. Let's talk about the Chiefs. So Rashee Rice was allegedly driving 119 miles per hour. And I don't even know if that's allegedly. I think they probably know that for a fact. This is becoming a pretty big deal, pretty bad situation. This is separate. I know I'm not saying that this guy's replacing Rashee Rice, but Andy Reid was talking about Kadarius Toney, and he called Kadarius Toney one of the most talented players on the team. So, you know, Reid is kind of an optimist, but we know Toney is talented. But anyway, this is another team, Jamie, that could be in the market for a wide receiver. With all this Rashee Rice, with a bad offseason for Rashee Rice, you know, how do you evaluate that situation?
I would think they're still in the market for a wide receiver if Rashee Rice never got behind the wheel of the car.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Marquise Brown at 30 is the answer for them, or 28, whatever how old he is the answer for them long term as their potential number one or number two receiver, however they view Brown and or Rice. So they have to plan for life after Travis Kelce. They have to plan for life after Marquise Brown. They haven't had a legit number one receiver since Tyreek Hill was traded 2 years ago because Rice is still young and Juju was not the answer. So I think they're still trying to rebuild their receiving core. So I wouldn't necessarily look at this as an indictment on they're expecting Rice to be suspended for X amount of games. They're expecting Rice to miss any significant time. I don't think that's how it should be viewed. So, you know, for people that are selling Rice in dynasty leagues, make sure you're getting good value in return because he still might play the majority of the season. You know, I don't know how much the NFL is going to look at this and say, we're going to let the legal process play out, or they're just going to say code of conduct and suspend him for a couple of games. You know, so thankfully nobody was, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, injured in the accidents or nobody died. I know that.
It was not, no major injuries. They are being sued for minor injuries, both.
Yeah, which is clearly something to, you know, not scoff at, but, by all accounts, in terms of, you know, how the league will discipline Rice and what that means for the Chiefs in the NFL draft, I just don't think that should be an indictment on where Rice stands on the team or how should he be viewed in fantasy long-term, short-term.
Did you see the trade that went down in our dynasty league?
It was Rice and a pick for 2 picks, right?
Okay, so it was pick 101, Superflex Dynasty, 101, and 206 for Rashee Rice and 103. So he moved down from 101 to 103. He got Rashee Rice. He gave up pick 206. Interesting. Wow. Yeah.
Did the team that gave up the 101, are they set at quarterback? Because this is a brand new dynasty league, right? So he might have just had a bad first year.
Yeah, I think so. That was the Breakfast Club, right? That was
Tim. That's Tim.
He has Tua, Kyler, Jared Stidham, Derek Carr, Bailey Zappi. He has Tua, Kyler, and Carr.
I guess he's okay taking, you know, May, McCarthy, or Daniels, obviously, if he slips that far.
And he also has
after one of the top three receivers. I don't think I hate it.
He tanked. He lost every game last year. Went 0-14. He could definitely win the league this year. he's gonna have a good team. Okay.
He has how many first round picks?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, he has a lot of first round picks and he has Achan, Spears, Lamb, Metcalf, Pitts, McLaurin, Rashee Rice, Devontae Smith. And he's probably going to have Marvin Harrison or something like that, too. Okay, anywho, let's move on here. Another Chiefs note, that former rugby player, Lewis Rees-Zammit, is going to start out as a running back for the Chiefs. Now, more important news items. T. Higgins expects to play this year for the Bengals. Hopefully, fences mended there. Brandon Ayuk unfollowed the 49ers on social media. He has 1 year left on his contract. And then he'll be a free agent unless they come to terms on an agreement. Maybe there'll be a draft night trade. We shall see. Kevin Stefanski said there's no timetable for Nick Chubb's return. Devontae Adams says he wants to be in Las Vegas. He likes Antonio Pierce. He said he wants to stay with the Raiders. Puka Nacua said he threw up in Cooper Kupp's bushes during offseason training. I guess they were doing some training.
Every day.
Every day. He threw up on the lawn or the bushes. And
Nacua.
Yeah, Puka Nacua. Sure, low-hanging fruit, but I was going to make that joke, but then I was like, I probably should have made it. I don't think I would have invited you guys back if you guys puked twice. Once I would have been like, okay, it's a fluke. If you start doing that twice, I think you're done training at my
house. Well, after you clogged Nando's toilet, did he invite you back?
Yes, I have been back, but I haven't used that toilet again. I clogged it with urine and toilet paper, okay? It wasn't...
All right,
Tim has 3 picks in the first round.
Oh. Wow. Let's see. Daniel Jones is expected to be ready for training camp as he recovers from a torn ACL. Does anybody think Daniel Jones could be a sleeper if the Giants draft?
Get out.
what else? Justin Jefferson did not report to voluntary workouts. Cortland Sutton also did not report to voluntary workouts, and neither did CeeDee Lamb. The Cowboys signed.
One of those things is not like the other.
I know. The Cowboys signed Royce Freeman. The Eagles signed Devontae Smith to a 3-year extension. Tennessee offensive coordinator Nick Holtz said that Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard are interchangeable.
Yay. That's what we want. We want ambiguous backfields where you never know who's going to do what from week to week. But that's kind of what I thought would happen. There it is.
Miami edge Jalen Phillips expects to be ready for week one. He's their best pass rusher, and he's recovering from a torn Achilles. The Colts signed defensive tackle, their own defensive tackle, re-signed him. Or no, gave him an extension, 2 years, $46 million. His name is DeForest.
All right, hold up. Jamie, who are you taking first, a Titans running back or the rookie running back the Cowboys draft?
Depends. Is Jonathan Brooks healthy for week one?
Okay. What about the rookie running back that the Chargers draft or a Titans running back?
Titans running back.
Dave, okay. Which tight end?
I was with you on the Cowboys.
Which tight end did the Eagles sign?
CJ Hamuzo!
Seattle signed an offensive lineman, Lakin Tomlinson. And here are some of the players who've been...
I botched that. It should have been Hamozu.
Some players who've been invited to the NFL draft. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. Also, Brian Thomas has been invited.
Darius Robinson was a surprising name on the invitation list. Not that anybody knows who he is if you play fantasy, but pass rusher, Missouri. Wasn't sure he was going to be a first-round pick. My guess is he will be if he's...
These are the guys who are going, right?
Going.
Right. So not invitations because they invite a lot of people.
Okay. So I thought it was invited. Did they invite J.J. McCarthy?
I would guess yes.
He's the one. Okay. He did. He was invited. Okay. Okay. And Tom Brady says he's not opposed to a late season return. So there you go.
He wants to pull Flacco?
Maybe.
Hey, Gardner, the owner's coming down to play.
Yeah. Players who could be affected by the NFL draft. All right, Jamie talked about Kyler Murray. That's a lot of passing games here, obviously. Can I ask separately before we get into your list, and I know this is actually going to include players on both of your lists, but the tight ends, you got Trey McBride, Dalton Kincaid, and Evan Ingram. They're top six, top seven tight ends in most rankings, and these are three teams that could be drafting a wide receiver in the first round. Jamie, are you concerned about any of those guys? You think you could be moving them down? That would be McBride, Kincaid, and Ingram.
No. I think first off, what we talk about first or second on the team in targets, I think all three of these guys will fall into that no matter what happens. Jacksonville, maybe if they were to trade up outside of the into the top 10 and get one of the top three guys, then maybe that changes things, because then you have Kirk and a high profile rookie. Not that taking one at 16 or 17 wherever they are is a non-high profile rookie, but I think Ingram's established himself as a go-to guy for Trevor Lawrence and Doug Peterson's offense. We've talked about this for years. He's a tight end friendly coach. In terms of the other two, you know, McBride was exceptional last year from his time as the lead guy once Zach Ertz was let go week six on. And in terms of Kincaid, I just think that this is going to be a huge year for him, as he's one of these year two tight ends that take a huge leap forward. So barring Buffalo completely overhauling their receiving core, I think it would probably take a trade at this point. I don't see them going away from Kincaid as a top two option on the team.
Dave, do you think that these three tight ends are in jeopardy here with a first round wide receiver being added?
Yes, with Kincaid the least and McBride the most. And I love what McBride did last year at the end of the year. He was awesome. But I think the guy who's going to get a ton of targets in Arizona would be Marvin Harrison if he were to go there. And then in Jacksonville, it's hard to see Evan Ingram getting as many catches even without an addition to the receiving core. But Jacksonville's got to do something, and I would imagine that they would add somebody who can stretch the field on the perimeter and do the things that Calvin Ridley couldn't quite do consistently enough last year.
Well, in the first 11 games of the season before Christian Kirk got hurt, Ingram was on pace for 127 targets. In the last six games after the Kirk injury, he was on pace for 173 targets. So that is 46 more targets. Now, yep. I want to look at Trevor Lawrence's pass attempts. That may have gone up, because actually looking at the game log, Zay Jones was stepping in and getting eight or more targets. He only played in four of those six games, but he was getting eight or more targets in all of the games he played. So, you know, that was a target replacement for Kirk. So it may have just been that Lawrence was throwing more. But I did want to point that out. Like, the numbers really spiked for Ingram once Christian Kirk got hurt.
Sure. Middle of the field got more open.
Ridley.
Without Kirk there.
How about this? Replacing Ridley. Now, he was third on the team. Ridley was actually third on the team in targets before Kirk's injury, but he was by far number one on the team throughout the season in red zone and end zone targets. Nobody else had more than like 10 red zone targets. Calvin Ridley had 24 end zone targets, 26 red zone targets. So that's a lot of targets in that area of the field that need to be replaced. That was the go-to guy for Lawrence there. And then, I just want to press you on McBride, Jamie, because he had no target competition, really. I mean, Greg Dortch was second on the team in targets in that last stretch with Kyler and McBride. So they bring in Harrison. You still think?
It was also before Kyler came back, too.
Yeah, I specifically looked at the eight games with Kyler and McBride, and Dortch was second on the team in targets. McBride had like a 25% target share. They draft Marvin Harrison. You think he can still be an elite tight end?
Yeah.
Okay. Who else would you like to talk? You want to talk about the Colts, Jamie?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you see them either in the market for a wide receiver or Brock Bowers, you know, especially where they're picking. They're in the right range for it. You know, whether it's one of the top three guys slipping, probably Odunze. You know, wouldn't be surprising if they reached for a wide receiver, traded down and still got one, or again, took Bowers. And the two-sided part of this would be, how much is Michael Pittman impacted by one of those guys, and how much is it a benefit for Anthony Richardson? And I think you can make the case for both clearly. You know, Richardson, any additional playmakers that can be added is just a boost for him because of what he should be able to do as a runner and then what he will continue to enhance his production as a passer. And then I don't think Pittman will be significantly downgraded, but you know, he needs the target volume. And I think, you know, given the quarterback situation, you know, again, Richardson, I think, surprised us as a passer, but as we've talked about time and time again, is he going to be the type of quarterback that elevates his receivers, at least at this point in his career? And so you got to be a little bit worried for Pittman's situation if Bowers or high profile receiver ends up there. Now, if they pass on that, then Pittman's in a great spot, but be a little bit of a concern if they do go out and get somebody in that range.
All right. Also on Jamie's list, Justin Herbert. I'll ask both of you guys. I think Dave, you had Herbert as well. Obviously, they've got the fifth pick, so it's not hard to envision a scenario where Justin Herbert gets some help early. But how high do you think you could see ranking him if they take? I'll just give him Neighbors or Odunze to the Chargers. You know, Dave, where do you think that puts Justin Herbert? And I think you're the high.
I think it puts him at 11th.
You're high on him to be higher on him to begin with, then,
because I'm expecting the Chargers to grab a receiver early in this draft. If they don't, he's going further south.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
How about you, Jamie?
He's outside the top 12 for me now. I believe my 12th quarterback is Purdy. So if he gets one of those guys, you know, you want to put Herbert ahead of Purdy, that's fine. Right now, Herbert is 15th for me, so he's behind Tua. He's behind Cousins, actually, because I think Cousins' weapons are better. I'm worried about Herbert. You know, it's not just the receiving core, it's the system he's in. You know, and what we've seen from at least Harbaugh's quarterbacks, college and pro, is he doesn't ask them to be difference makers like we love. You know, they can be, certainly. You know, Colin Kaepernick did it with his legs. I think from the standpoint of Herbert, like right now, this receiving corps is awful. It is arguably the worst in the NFL.
Yes.
And a rookie, will that dramatically change things? I hope so. But I'm still going to be cautiously optimistic as opposed to fully optimistic. So he'll be a borderline number one quarterback for me. He will not be a top 10 guy. Like if you tell me Kyler right now doesn't get anybody and Herbert does, I'll still take Kyler over Herbert.
Ooh.
Okay. Wow. Jamie, what did you want to say about the Bills passing game? And Dave, too, I think you have Josh Allen as a potential loser if they don't add a top wide receiver. But I guess I would say, like, you know, what wide receiver would the Bills have to draft for you to feel confident in Allen as your number one quarterback?
I mean, I'd go crazy if they made a big move up to get one of the top three guys. And so, I mean, he can't go higher than one in that case. So what happens if they keep their pick in round one and they get one of Brian Thomas, if he's there, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy? Do you give Josh Allen the benefit of the doubt, given that his receiving core kind of has taken this step back? I kind of want to. I think he's earned it. Not only is he like he's got one of the strongest arms in the league. His accuracy has gotten better, and you know he's going to bring it running the ball and scoring a bunch of touchdowns on the ground. And so I think I'm still going to keep him at number one as long as Buffalo does something with one of their first two picks. They add another wide receiver that can help stretch the field a little bit. I think that's what they need, is a field stretcher, because Kincaid, he can stretch. He's a matchup nightmare at tight end, but he's not like a big playmaker. He doesn't have the same type of speed a receiver would have. Curtis Samuel has been a short area target for a while. Khalil Shakir is a good receiver, not a speedster. They need to add some speed. They need somebody that Allen can target on passes of 20 plus air yards.
It's a matter of just how much we are going to bank on what his rushing production was last year by comparison to previous years, because the yardage was relatively the same, but his touchdowns doubled. You know, to go from 7-8, which is kind of where he lived, to 15, is that sustainable? And as Sean McDermott has said time and time again, that's not something that they want to put on his plate. They just don't take it off of his plate. You know, and so it's hard to expect him to rush less when there's the lack of receivers who are available to him on his own team right now. So a lot of what he did last year was not because of Stephon Diggs. The threat of Stephon Diggs is clearly important, but a lot of what his production was not necessarily Diggs. Now, can he get by with Shakir and Curtis Samuel is fast. I know Dave's point in terms of, you know, down the field, that's not Curtis Samuel's necessarily forte, or at least the type of receiver I think Dave was talking about. But Samuel and Shakir and Kincaid and Knox and James Cook, like that's not the group that you look at. And I can't sit here and say that Justin Herbert has a terrible receiving core and say Josh Allen's is great, because it's not. But it certainly would be a surprise if they're not drafting a wide receiver. And I think that's what the sports books have it as, you know, the first position that the Bills will take. That's the most logical odds. So we'll see. It is going to be telling when we come out of the NFL draft what our rankings look like at that position across the board, because Jalen Hurts, who's I think the consensus number two quarterback, his receiving core is as good as any in the league. The third quarterback in Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, one coming off an MVP season that you know what he does with his legs, and his receiving core is for the most part the same, if not better, with a healthy Mark Andrews. And Mahomes got a weapon, assuming Rashee Rice is not suspended. You know, so the knocks that we had on Mahomes, you know, his situation got better. So is Allen the smart choice to go first? And I struggle with it. I really do, because of the guys that he has available to him.
On one hand, it reminds you of Mahomes 2 years ago, right? Where he loses Tyreek Hill and he becomes QB 3 or 4 in ADP. He was behind Herbert and he ended up having an amazing year. But with Allen, just looking at the games with Joe Brady, he was only on pace for 4,143 passing yards. It's really not a lot for him. 24 touchdown passes, 17.
How many rushing touchdowns?
19. He was on pace for 19 rushing. So you say there's no way he can do that. But then you also have to say, well, if he doesn't do that, some of those are going to become passing touchdowns. And in that stretch, he was Josh Allen with Joe Brady last 7 games of the regular season was the number 2 quarterback per game. Only Lamar Jackson averaged more. Josh Allen was just under 26.9 points per game and 6 points per passing touchdown leagues, which is really good. So,
and that was with Stephon Diggs really not contributing that much.
Right. All right, we got to take another break here. We'll talk about the Jets passing game. We'll talk about guys like Zamir White and Joe
old
Nixon,
running backs,
Aaron Jones, George Pickens, you know, he's on everybody's breakout list right now, but what, you know, how much capital would the Steelers invest in wide receiver in the draft? They're pretty good at plucking wide receivers on day 2. We'll be right back after this break on FFT.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
The Jets passing game. Okay. Jamie, this was on your list of players who could be impacted by the draft. What do you think? What do you think of this situation? Who's got the most to gain or lose?
Rodgers to gain and Garrett Wilson to lose. I mean, you know, they're in another prime position to add a prominent wide receiver or Bowers, you know, and if they go that route, then what does that mean for their top pass catcher and their aging quarterback coming off an Achilles injury? And so this is another quarterback that has top 15, if not top 12 potential. Offensive line was significantly upgraded. If he's healthy, you know, he was being drafted last year. His ADP was as a top 12 quarterback. So you give him Garrett Wilson, which we know has breakout potential, and you give him another prime pass catcher that could be potential superstar. That only enhances the upside of what Rodgers will be. He'll be drafted as number 2 quarterback, but I would take my chances with him over Daniel Jones. No offense, if that's the case. and then the downgrade that we may have to give to Garrett Wilson, you know, so I'm probably not going to run away from Garrett Wilson. It's hard to necessarily expect him to, you know, fall significantly, but if it is another receiver there, you know, we dealt with this a little bit in the spring of, or the early part of the spring of, is Devontae Adams going to the Jets? You know, is that wish going to be granted to Aaron Rodgers and potentially Adams if that's what he wanted, as we're coming to find out. Apparently he doesn't. So, you know, it could be a downgrade for where Wilson's being drafted, not necessarily where he'll be ranked, but probably not going to take him as a borderline first round pick if there's somebody else there.
What do you do with Breece Hall if they draft Bowers? Because Breece Hall was so great for fantasy managers last year because of the added receptions that he got. And Bowers, I mean, this is a stat that I found while I was studying him. He had 99 of his 175 career catches at Georgia were on passes of 5 or fewer air yards. He had an ADOT under 7 last year for Georgia. A ton of short targets, and he's effective on those plays. And I can't help but think that any team that gets Brock Bowers is going to use him that way. Those short targets of the tight ends, we talk about it all the time. When that position gets an uptick in targets, the running backs frequently take a hit. And that makes me a little nervous. I kind of don't want Brock Bowers to go to the Jets. I want him to go to Indy or Cincinnati. Like, those are the teams where, yeah, he'll take away from somebody, but at least it won't necessarily impact the running backs in a major way.
I don't necessarily disagree with what the reception total could look like. I still think he's a 40 to 50 catch guy, no matter who is on the team, just because I think that's in his profile. But I also think in terms of Breece Hall, what will benefit him is A, more scoring opportunities because of a better offense, mostly with a better quarterback, but the offensive line upgrades are just going to help him as a rusher across the board.
That's true.
So I don't really worry about Breece Hall, no matter who they had.
So even more efficient as a runner, but fewer targets.
Potentially. Yeah. Like, yeah. 70 catches, I don't think is realistic, but I don't think it's realistic anyway, no matter who they add, just because, again, I think he'll be more successful running the ball, and Rodgers will make this offense better. So it won't have to be a lot of panic and dump off passes. But I also do think that what we see from him as a rusher is potentially astronomical.
I don't know how you guys feel about it, but we're obviously going to be having these conversations a lot after rounds 1, 2, and 3 specifically of the NFL draft. But, you know, I guess I've always kind of felt like if you're a great wide receiver, you're not going to be affected by pretty much anything except maybe a quarterback change. You know, there were people, maybe me, downgrading Antonio Brown a little bit because we had these big hopes for Martavis Bryant 1 year,
or maybe Justin Jefferson last year,
Juju Smith-Schuster, right? Like, and it never really affected Antonio Brown. You know, I'm not that Garrett Wilson is that, but for Garrett Wilson to be really affected by a rookie wide receiver, I think that rookie wide receiver would have to be pretty good. You know, if it's one of the big three, okay, then yeah. If it's a fourth guy, I don't know. If it's Bowers, I'm thinking I'd compare that really to like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta. Obviously had no effect on St. Brown. I feel like the more likely scenario is that if those guys are good, the biggest impact would just be boosting the quarterback rather than hurting the wide receiver.
Yeah, it's kind of totally fair. And I guess I'll just sort of clarify what I said. Like, I'm not downgrading Garrett Wilson from end of round 1 to round 3. It would be from pick, let's say, 11 to 14.
Yeah.
You know, where you're nitpicking with those guys.
Mm-hmm. And it's not one size fits all, right? There's no hard and fast rule here. DK Metcalf is a guy. Like, I'm just looking now at his target per route run rate. Last 3 seasons, 26%, 24.4%, 21.9%. It's a huge drop. And they've never, ever had a number 3 guy at any position that's done anything significant. Like, in the last 10 years, I feel like, in Seattle. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. And they really haven't had a number 3 target. They did last year. So even though JSN didn't have a big year, would you guys say it's fair to say he negatively impacted DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You know, I think Geno Smith taking a step back is part of it. I think, you know, defense is adjusting to the offense without Dave Canales there is part of it. You know, so there's a lot of things that were at play.
The target share was way down. Metcalf missed 1 game. You always have to consider that. But the targets in general were lower for Metcalf. Okay. Let's go to some of the players Dave wanted to talk about here. Who are the running backs that you think have a lot to gain? Or I guess you were really taking it from a lot to lose standpoint. Who are the running backs that have a lot to lose?
Let's start with a lot of running backs who have been in our lives as fantasy managers for a long time and are potentially nearing the end of their careers. They're all on teams where the depth behind them isn't necessarily good. And in the case of many of them, they're in contract years. I'm talking about Aaron Jones, who just signed in Minnesota, James Conner in Arizona, Nick Chubb, Cleveland, Joe Mixon, now in Houston. I think you can add Gus Edwards to that list too. These are guys that are going to be impactful for the next season, theoretically, on their teams. But NFL teams tend to get ahead and draft a year ahead, especially after round one. And it wouldn't surprise me if each of those teams, and obviously the Chargers is obvious, and maybe the Browns is too, that they are going to go and add to their running back room via this draft. And it's not an awesome running back draft class. We've said that. But it's almost like there's enough running backs where, all right, there's one or two things that are flaws about them, but they can still play in the league. And so I expect a lot of these running backs to get into situations this year where they're going to act as 1B type of players and have the chance to evolve into 1A type players by 2025.
Okay. Do you think with Aaron Jones specifically, I don't think we expect him to be like a 18 carry guy to begin with. So does he have maybe a little bit less to lose just because he's already going to be a tandem guy, but hopefully make his hay with some pass catching, Aaron Jones?
I hope so. That's something that they can do. I think the Vikings should feel really good about that. They just signed him. They know what he's capable of doing. They've been playing against him for how many years now? When is he in Green Bay?
Yeah.
Unless it's Jonathan Brooks, which would be a surprise given all the needs that the Vikings have. I think that Aaron Jones will still have, you know, the driver's seat to begin the season. But if they go and they add Jalen Wright, for example, who's kind of like a lesser zone run type running back compared to Brooks, but he's got speed. That's a guy who a good training camp gets the offense. He can be a factor early. I mean, a coaching staff will find time for players like that on Sundays.
All right. Wide receivers. Let's start with George Pickens here, Jamie, and Steelers take a second round wide receiver. Does this affect your Pickens breakout hype?
No. I mean, it's almost like your argument with Garrett Wilson. Like the second receiver right now in Pittsburgh, if I'm not mistaken, is Van Jefferson. Like it's not exactly the most solidified spot. So I can't imagine Russell Wilson looking at his profile where these type of guys, whether it's DK Metcalf, you know, I'm not going to put Tyler Lockett in this category, but big physical wide receivers that have the opportunity to make plays down the field. Metcalf, Sutton, and now Pickens. I think this is going to be his go-to guy. So they're definitely adding to this receiving core. It's the same thing Buffalo we know is adding to his receiving core. Arizona is adding to his receiving core. When they do it, we just don't necessarily have the full scope of. The Chargers are adding to the receiving core. You know, like they're not coming out of the draft without somebody or two bodies, you know, and Pittsburgh is coming out of this with a receiver, you know. So the things that really are going to change Garrett Wilson and George Pickens and help Josh Allen dramatically is the surprise trades, the AJ Brown draft night trade that we didn't see coming. You know, those are the things that are going to really dramatically sway, I think, what happens, you know. So, you know, Harrison's going to hopefully go to Cardinals or Chargers. You know, Neighbors maybe one of those two teams as well. You know, there's going to be a potential surprise trade up into the top 10, or maybe Chicago surprises us at 9 and takes one of those guys. You know, those are the things I think that you look at really when it comes to adding to the Jets, adding to the Colts, adding to the Steelers. Like, those are expected moves. So I don't think it's necessarily a huge downgrade, again, unless they trade up and do something crazy, which I don't think Pittsburgh is going to do. So you say day two pick? No, I'm not worried about
it. Let me make it day one then. But let's say it's not one of the top three guys for Pittsburgh. Let's say it's anyone else. Brian Thomas on down for Pittsburgh in day one.
Yeah, I'm not worried. You know, I mean, if it's Mitchell, if it's Worthy, you know, if it's any of those guys that are expected to be, you know, back end of the first round type of guys, no, I'm not worried about Pickens.
You mentioned that Brandon Ayuk took the 49ers off of his accounts. What if the Steelers give up their first and the Niners say, all right, we can't re-sign this guy.
That was my point. Huge draft day trades of established players, then yes. Mike Tomlin and his doppelganger, if they're on the same team, then we have issues for George Pickens. But if it's rookie, even second tier round one rookie, I'm not worried about Pickens, at least not for this year. Maybe long-term, yes, but not for this year, no.
I would bet the Steelers are looking for one of the precise route runners in this draft and someone that can be a good short and intermediate weapon for Russ to lean on. So McConkey, Pearsall, Roman Wilson, those are going to be the top three guys, but there's others that could go into Pittsburgh. And there's a pretty good track record of the Steelers drafting receivers outside of round one who turn out to be really helpful for fantasy.
It's just, we can't get to every scenario today, Dave. So I want to talk about the Vikings and
which quarterback is best for them.
Yeah, basically.
Caleb Williams. Okay, so they're not going to get Caleb Williams. I think the coaching staff loves Drake May. There's an obvious connection between Josh McCown and Drake May. McCown coached May in North Carolina when he was in high school, and they've obviously stayed in touch. I think almost any quarterback that they could take if they trade up into the top four would be fine. I don't think the value would go down for Jefferson, Addison, Hockenson, even if it's J.J. McCarthy. I don't think McCarthy's a bad quarterback. If it's May, there are some flaws with May. I still think he'd be able to rip it enough times from week to week to get numbers for those pass catchers. If it's Penix or Bo Nix, I'd be a little bit more nervous. I'd worry about the upside for those guys.
You said the Vikings like Drake May. I just want to take a second here. I think Dan Schneier is related to Drake May. I mean, every time I'm on Twitter, he is retweeting some clip of Drake May. I'm going to go through Dan's last 10 tweets, and let's see if there are three or more that are about Drake May. Here's one about
Drake Schneier.
Caleb Williams. So far, zero. Could be zero. Zero. Oh, here's he's promoting a Drake May profile on his Giants podcast. That's one. He's crapping on Dave Gettleman. That's the other thing he likes to do a lot. I think I'm only seeing there's two. Every current elite NFL quarterback has elite arm talent. With very few draft prospects have it. Drake May is one of them. He loves Drake May. All right, I think I'm only seeing two here. But yeah, have you done a profile of Drake May with him yet, Dave? Did you do that on 55?
Yes.
Effusive praise from Schneier. And I don't really.
Yeah, and I get it. Like, he's got a strong arm. He can make anticipatory throws. He's probably the best anticipatory thrower in the draft class. That means he can throw to a spot before the receiver gets there. It's exactly what Kevin O'Connell would want from his quarterback. Cousins did it a ton. Yeah. It's just a matter of he was late a lot of times on throws. I think it has to do with footwork issues, mechanical issues. He was sped up when he was pressured. These are things that a lot of quarterbacks can get better at. But he's a good athlete. He's got a big, strong arm. Been playing quarterback his whole life. He knows what he's doing when he's out there. He's rather fearless, and I think that he can throw with accuracy as well. So I get where Dan's coming from.
And I'm just letting you all know, he wants the Giants to take Drake May. If the Giants don't take Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison, if they don't take Harrison or Nabers, I'm done with the Giants. I will have a new team next fall.
If they take a quarterback, you're done with the Giants.
If it's not Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, yes. My is Williams, Daniels, Harrison, Nabers. Those are the only four players I will accept to be on the Giants. Now, what if they're all off the board though, and it's not really their fault? Then I'll be a Giants fan. But
you're gonna be a Giants fan no matter what.
So what's your top six? There's four. Who's the next two?
For the Giants specifically, or just in general? Because I don't know that I want them to take Joe Alt, you know, because then he'd have to play right tackle. I guess I would say Adunze and Bowers.
So four pass catchers and two quarterbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
So Drake May's there. Yeah. You say no.
Drake May, with the caveat that I know for a fact that I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm just a fan like all of you. Drake May reminds me a little bit of Jameis Winston, where I feel like he made a lot of mistakes in college, a lot of interceptions. Like, you don't see that with May, but you see mistakes and everybody kind of excused them, including me. Too many negatives, I think, with Drake May. It scares me a little bit. Like, all the things Dave talked about, and then you just watch these games, and yes, he makes amazing throws. He also has these head-scratching moments.
Sure, and coaches think that they can fix that. Sure. And I remember that was one of the about Winston. Oh, a good coach will fix that. Well, sometimes they don't get to good coaches. If Dable were to more than just this coming season, I'd be kind of optimistic about May with him and Dable being able to coach him up a little bit, because he did it with Josh Allen. The problem is that I think if the Giants have another terrible season, there's going to be a big coaching change there.
LOL.
You can order your hoodie now, Adam.
Andrew in the chat says, LOL, Adam just drew his line. And then Jordan says, Azer still owes us three lines. That I did not shave into my head on draft-a-thon night. All right, some emails here. This is from Josh. Our email address is fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That is the letter I, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Dear Sergey, Matthew, Alexander, and Carter. Oh, those are Florida Panthers. What a big weekend we have coming up here. Knicks, Panthers, let's go.
Knicks, Panthers.
Josh may have discovered a new handcuff strategy for people in multiple leagues that I have called reverse handcuffing. Typically, handcuffs are used to minimize risk. In the event that your starter is injured, you have a suitable replacement. In contrast, reverse handcuffs give you more risk but increase your upside. In reverse handcuffing, you pick the backup of a player who you roster in a different league. And I'll just leave his says a lot more, but you're handcuffing a team in a different fantasy league. So that's interesting.
So I drafted Christian McCaffrey in one league, and in another league, I draft Elijah Mitchell. And if McCaffrey goes down, I'm toast in that league, but I've got Elijah Mitchell in the other league.
Yeah, so last year he did that.
I might go 7-7 in both leagues.
No, last year he had a team with Nick Chubb and Elijah Mitchell, and he had another team with Christian McCaffrey and Jerome Ford. So the Chubb-Mitchell team stunk, but he had McCaffrey and Jerome Ford in the other one.
Now, I wonder, did he draft Jerome Ford, or did he just happen to pick up Jerome Ford?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
See, I mean, look, it's obviously when you play in multiple leagues, you know, we all do. I would say the majority of our audience probably does, but it's just minimizing your misery. You know, it's like, you know, in the league where you drafted McCaffrey first, you have probably the expectation that you're going to have a very good fantasy team because you have the best player in fantasy. And then if he goes down, okay, your season may be sunk, as Dave said. You have 2-7-7 teams, but the other league, okay, now you have a chance to be awesome. It's I think we're speaking to a small audience here of people that may implore that.
Next email is from Bad Books. So he sees these NFL teams signing punt returners, kick returners, because of the new rules. What are ideal league scoring changes, in your opinions, to make this fun and somewhat fair versus just leaving it as DST points, which I feel could swing weeks too far on one side of DST randomness?
You could do return yardage for players, and then that changes how you may draft certain players that are going to be more involved in the return game. So,
do you have a suggestion on what that would look like?
I mean, you're giving a point per every 10 kick return yards and touchdowns for kick returns only to those specific players. You know, so let's just say the Dolphins decide to make Devon Achane a kick returner, and then that just makes him that much more valuable. Again, I wish Heath was on the show. I believe the first year of the YOLO Dynasty League, he had similar scoring for special teams returns, so punt returns also factor in. And I know I drafted Tyreek Hill probably around earlier than he was going to go because of that, which worked out great. This was his rookie season. So, you know, you start to do your research on who's going to be the kick and punt return guys. And if we're getting yardage for that, that may enhance the value of some of the veterans that are going to be involved in those particular moves.
I'd be a little more conservative on the yardage that you'd give to kick and punt returners, especially now with the new rules. The kick returners are going to get anywhere from 10 to 20 yards every single time they get one of those kicks. And if they break one to the house, it's 6 points for the touchdown, and it's going to be like 7-8 points on your scoring for the yardage on top of it, which is just like how it is for a long touchdown catch or a long touchdown run. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think could change how your weeks go too.
Let's take it away from let's take it away from the big name guys. Let's say it's Cordarrelle Patterson, for example, who's probably only going to be a returner for the majority of his production.
Oh, you think so? With Arthur Smith as
the let's
that
hope.
Dude's taking five carries every week, and I'm going to cry.
Okay, so let's say it's five carries or five touches every week, and so he's getting, let's say, 3 points on his offensive touches, but he's getting 7 or 8 points per game on his special team touches. That makes him a flex.
Can I give you guys two players? Okay, I'm looking at the return yardage leaders last year. There were two players who had...
If you're giving us kick return yardage, throw it out, because it's going to be a completely different play this year.
Yeah, but I feel like it could only increase for these guys. But Keyshawn Nixon and Xavier Gibson of the Packers and Jets, respectively, they both had more than 800, between 800 and 900 combined kick and punt return yards. That was last year. They scored only one touchdown, but you know, getting up to almost 900 yards, it's not nothing there. And then if you think it's only going to go up because there are going to be more returns this year, you could be talking about these guys over 1,000 yards, but you know, touchdowns are still going to be pretty hard to come by. So
I would say if you're in a league that has scoring, like Jamie suggested, and it's not wrong to do scoring like that, be sure you're ready to draft accordingly,
because
someone else in that league will be, and you don't want to be caught off guard by, a player that you would normally never consider drafting, suddenly being worth 1,000 yards and maybe 2 or 3 touchdowns over the course of the year. I also, the more I think about that play and the more I think about the deterrent, if a team kicks the ball through the end zone, the opposing team gets it at their 30, it's 5 more yards than where it was last year. I bet there's still going to be a lot of touchbacks.
I wouldn't scoff at 5 yards. I think it's a pretty big deal. And man, it used to be the 20-yard line. Now starting at a possession at the 30-yard line. I know it's recently it's the 25, but
the original proposal was 35-yard line, and that would have made it a huge deterrent.
Yeah,
because now you're giving a team a third of the field. I feel like 30 yards is like the happy medium, and I would still imagine that there will be a lot of plays where balls are kicked through the end zone.
All right, this is from Nathan. Where's he from?
Nathan is from Fresno, California.
Recently did a dynasty startup. I took 4 quarterbacks with my first 4 picks because I like the values. Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, and Trevor Lawrence. Not bad. I then traded Herbert 202 in the rookie draft. Second pick of second round. And a 2025 third rounder for Justin Jefferson. So Justin Herbert, pick 202 in the rookie draft, and a third round pick in 2025 for Justin Jefferson. And he still has Allen, Love, and Lawrence.
Did he say if it was Superflex or 2QB?
Yeah, it's Superflex.
It's a fair deal.
Yeah.
Actually, he didn't say it's Superflex. I guess I'm just assuming that.
If it's not Superflex, it's awful.
Yeah. It's the worst strategy I've ever heard if it's not super flex, but I don't see why it wouldn't be taking 4.
But if it's not super flex, look at what he gave up for Justin Jefferson.
It's awful for the Jefferson manager.
Right. It's terrible.
No, but taking 4 quarterbacks with your first 4 picks.
Yes, that's very terrible.
I'm assuming it's super flex.
I would hope so.
All right. Thank you to our emailers, to our viewers, our listeners, and to Dave and Jamie. Back tomorrow with some game shows. We're going to have some fun on Fantasy Football Today, which is unusual. We never have fun. So we'll talk to you then. Later.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount+.